Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
California's governor reconsidering a plan to raise the minimum wage in that state for healthcare workers to $25 an hour. Meanwhile, you've heard the line, the rich get richer. Well, now we have yet another example. And today on the show, the man behind the Real News Network and the president of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Employees. Welcome to the Thursday, December 14th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. Bit of a change in our lineup today. We are going to join Maximilian Alvarez on the show. Now, who is Maximilian Alvarez? Well, if you're a longtime listener of America's Workforce, you might have heard him about 3 or 4 years ago. He is currently the editor-in-chief of the Real News Network and host of a podcast that's gaining a lot of ground called Working People. He's also the author of a book, The Work of Living, and he's got an interesting story and an interesting campaign that's going to happen this Saturday. His background, 10 years ago, Max was working 12-hour days as a warehouse temp. This was in Southern California, while his family, like millions of others, struggled to stay afloat in the wake of the Great Recession. Eventually, family lost everything, including the house he grew up in. Well, it was in the years that followed when hope seemed lost and help from above seemed impossibly absent, said Max, that he realized the life-saving importance of everyday workers coming together, sharing stories, showing our scars, as he put it, and reminding one another that we're not alone. And since then, he started the podcast Working People. If you get an opportunity after the show, just Google Working People and you'll find it. And that is a podcast where Max interviews workers about their lives, jobs, dreams, and struggles. He also works as an associate editor at the Chronicle Review and now editor-in-chief of the Real News Network. Now, here's the deal. It's been 10 months since the derailment of a Norfolk Southern freight train in East Palestine, Ohio, and the subsequent, I love this, controlled release and burn-off of toxic vinyl chloride, which pretty much changed life forever for the people living in that area. Now, most media outlets, politicians, members of the public, well, they have pretty much moved on. However, the residents of East Palestine, well, they've been left to fend for themselves in the toxic fallout, which happened on February 3rd of this year. So, Max is not forgetting them. This Saturday, December 16th, the Working People podcast is teaming up with residents in East Palestine to put on a 12-hour live stream fundraiser, which will be hosted online, and a 10-hour party, which will be hosted at the East Palestine Eagles Club to raise as much money as possible for families in need this holiday season. Comment here from Chris Albright. Chris is a father, husband, and resident of East Palestine. In fact, the New York Times did a story on he and his family about 6 months after the disaster. Chris said, "We've all had a heck of a year because of one company's greed and disregard for safety. Hopefully, with everyone's help, we can come together and feel normal for just a little bit for this holiday season." Yeah. We're going to get into the nitty-gritty. We're going to talk about people like Chris. We're going to talk about the Working People podcast and the importance of information like this, like America's Workforce. It's the stories that the mainstream media, well, they cover it for a while when they see that plume of smoke. But when it clears, well, they move on to the next story. So common. Matt Biggs will be joining us later in the show. He's one of our sponsors on behalf of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. And he's had that position since 2021, and prior to the election, he served as Secretary Treasurer. And he's a Washington, D.C. native. The Federation, by the way, very diverse labor union, have about 90,000 members in professional, technical, administrative, and associate occupations, not only in the United States, but in Canada as well. And recently, this was, I believe, last week, he was one of 21 panelists who took part in a bipartisan forum, which was hosted by Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and Senators Mike Rounds, Rounds is out of South Dakota, Martin Heinrich, New Mexico, and Todd Young out of Indiana. So again, Democrats and Republicans. And this was the ninth of a series of Senate forums held to examine artificial intelligence and its impact on all facets of society. Well, Matt recommended that congressional lawmakers legislate that any work performed by government employees that is deemed an inherently governmental function be closely associated with inherently governmental functions or subject to the national security exemption and be completely protected from being replaced by artificial intelligence. Now think about that. Think about that. Do you want artificial intelligence more or less managing our national security? I don't think so. I don't think so. But you know, anything can happen in this crazy world today. So Matt's going to talk about that. He's going to review 2023 and take a look at 2024. Matt Biggs, president of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. I believe I said employees. Well, they're all employees, but specifically they're engineers. Now, a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at boydwatterson.com. Registered nurses at Ascension St. Agnes Hospital in Baltimore, Maryland have voted to join National Nurses United, the nation's largest and fastest growing registered nurse union. The victory marks the first time in Baltimore history that registered nurses have unionized a hospital and the fourth Ascension-owned hospital to organize with the union in a short span of 13 months, including successful union drives at the Ascension Seton Medical Center in Austin, Texas, and Via Christi Ascension St. Francis and St. Joseph in Wichita, Kansas. We talked about those hospitals last week. They went on strike for one day because of the horrible working conditions, and then they were locked out for 3 days. Who in their right mind in management would do that and screw over their very own patients? But this is what we're dealing with today. By the way, this brings the total of RNs, National Nurses United RNs at Ascension Hospitals, to 2,500. Kimmy Ryder's an RN in the ICU at St. Agnes. Kimmy said, "This victory is a big win for our patients and for all of Baltimore, and we achieved it despite the administration's relentless efforts to undermine our legal rights to form a union," which, by the way, are currently under federal investigation. Ascension, mind you, too, very, very profitable. Very, very profitable. California's governor is reconsidering a plan to raise the minimum wage for healthcare workers to $25 an hour. This in light of a projected $68 billion state budget deficit. The wage increase was projected to cost $4 billion next year and going through 2025. Governor Newsom said the changes were part of an understanding reached with labor leaders before he signed the bill into law. So we'll see what happens there. Meanwhile, Apple faces a labor challenge in diversifying its production away from China and into India. In the southern state of Tamil Nadu, this is where companies like Foxconn assemble iPhones, a bill that would have allowed for 12-hour factory shifts aligning labor practices with those in China was shelved after encountering resistance from unions and opposition parties. Now, manufacturing in China and India present distinct challenges. China may impose nationwide inflexible policies like COVID-19 lockdowns, while India, well, India boasts robust courts and local governments with diverse labor policies. Big, big difference there. India, mind you, still has issues. But we'll see what happens with Apple. The share of estates that trigger the estate tax has reached a historic low in the United States. This according to a new report. If you go back to 2019, the latest year for which the IRS has released data, only 8 out of every 10,000 people who died left an estate big enough to be subject to the tax. Let me repeat that. 8 out of 10,000 people. Today, the estate tax is the weakest it's been in a century, according to the report by the Nonprofit Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. For 99.92% of Americans, yeah, that would be a clear majority, the report says the estate tax is irrelevant. The culprits, a series of laws enacted by both parties, this is Democrats and Republicans, that have steadily raised the estate tax exemption over several decades, as well as a boom in special trusts that the ultra-rich use to avoid paying taxes altogether. At the most recent peak, 1998, almost 2.5% of estates triggered estate taxes. The first significant cuts came under George W. Bush and were extended by Obama. This was under pressure from a Republican Congress. Now, if you go back to 2017, the Republican tax cuts turbocharged this trend by roughly doubling the size of estates that can be passed down tax-free from 5.49 million in 2017 to 11.4 million for 2019, and twice that for couples. So the average size of estates that owe taxes has ballooned as a result, the report found, and the percentage of estates subject to the tax has correspondingly shrunk. In 2019, more than half the estates paying a penalty, well, they were worth more than $50 million. And ultra-wealthy families have also increasingly poured their wealth into special trusts that shield their fortunes from taxation altogether. It's amazing what's going on. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the man behind the Real News Network and the Working People Podcast. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council, consisting of 8 iron worker local unions in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan. We build the skylines and bridges along the Great Lakes. With more work than ever before, the Great Lakes District Council is actively searching out the next great iron worker. Whether it's building the next Intel plant or constructing a bridge to safely connect our great cities along the lake. So join the Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council today. Find out how and learn more about the council by visiting iwdistrictcouncil.com. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at uaw.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. You can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go to the city of Baltimore. Baltimore, Maryland, joining us on our live line. Haven't had this guy on for a long time, and I'll tell you, he's had an interesting life, and he's made it more interesting in the last couple of years. His name is Maximilian Alvarez, and he is editor-in-chief of the Real News Network, and he started a podcast called Working People. And with a name like that, you know he belongs on America's Workforce Radio and Podcast. Maximilian Alvarez, how you doing, my brother? It's been a while.
Hey, brother. Yeah, it's been a minute, but it's wild because I still listen to you every morning, man. You're the voice that I drink my coffee to. But we haven't chatted on the show since 2019, and man, a lot has changed in the world and in our lives since then. But it's really, really great to be back on with you, brother.
And Max, let's go back to that. What were you doing 4 years ago? Because life has really, really changed for you. Let's talk about that. Go ahead.
You're not joking. I mean, because when I came on the show back in 2019, it was to talk about an article that I had co-written for In These Times, and that's what I was doing at that time. I was still a graduate student at the University of Michigan, which was also, fun fact, my only union job. Shout out to GEO over there at the University of Michigan, the Graduate Employees Organization. But I was a broke grad student. I was doing my PhD research, but I was also getting really fed up with, like, the kind of, you know, ivory tower sort of nature of everything. So I wanted to do more public writing. Of course, you know, like I myself had worked many low-wage jobs. I came to grad school after working at restaurants, after being a temp warehouse and factory worker back home in Southern California. So, and that was amidst, like, our family losing everything in the Great Recession, including the house that I grew up in. So, like, this was, like, what was going on the past decade with me. Went to graduate school, was trying to sort of become a professor, a professional academic, but was just like not really seeing the path forward there. And my heart bleeds for everyone who's trying to like make a career out of in higher education right now, because higher education's in a major crisis. But that's where I started doing the public writing for magazines like The Baffler, In These Times, The Nation, so on and so forth. But I also started my podcast, as you mentioned, where I interview working people in a Studs Terkel kind of vein, carrying on the torch that you've kept lit for many years, my brother. But I just have one-on-one deep conversations with workers. And I've since then, I've been talking to workers from all across the U.S. and Canada and even around the world. We just published an episode where I interviewed from across the hemisphere two Brazilian farm workers who were rescued from slavery in Brazil. Like, it's wild to me to think that when you and I had our last conversation back in 2019, that's when my podcast was still kind of in its early phases, and I was interviewing, like, GM workers in Lordstown who were getting laid off. And I was interviewing like my dad Jesus about, you know, like his life. And to think that, you know, going from then in 2019 when no one knew who the heck I was, and I was bugging them, asking them to come on my little podcast, fast forward now, I'm interviewing UAW workers who are going on the historic stand-up strike, winning a major contract gain. Shout out to the UAW. And I'm having the ability to interview, like, literally Brazilian farm workers in rural Bahia talking to me through a translator about how they escaped literal slave-like conditions and are now part of a government program to give the land back to workers who were rescued from these conditions. So it's been a wild ride, brother. And that's not even to say, like, anything about starting the job here at the Real News Network, where I get to work with an incredible team of journalists who are also taking that approach to lifting up voices from the front lines of struggle, whether that be at the workplace, whether that be, fighting for our rights, and fighting against the violations of our rights by anyone, by the police, by corporations like Norfolk Southern, by politicians, by anyone. Like, it's really been a wild ride, and it's an honor to get to do the work that I do. But yeah, amidst all of that, man, I have still been listening to my man Ed Flash Ferens every morning while I'm drinking my coffee. So thank you for being part of my morning routine.
Well, it's good that I could set the table with you, Max. I appreciate that. And yeah, I love doing the show. This is 25 years for my anniversary. I started this in 1998. The show America's Workforce actually started in Cleveland, Ohio, on a different radio station in 1993. So yeah, we made tremendous inroads here, and this year has been a boom year for us because we're now in the top 1% of all podcasts. That being said, how's Working People, your podcast there, is that starting to gain traction? You got any numbers on that?
Well, it's funny that you ask because so the answer is yes and no. Because I think that we have not seen the explosive growth that y'all have been seeing. But don't get me wrong, I am beyond excited to hear about that, because this has been just a really pivotal moment in the labor movement and in the history of this country. And it's so encouraging to hear that folks are turning to your show to learn what the heck is going on, because they're not hearing that on the regular radio. And they're also getting it from our brothers down south at the Valley Labor Report. I also love that you have Jacob and Adam on every week or every month. They're doing incredible work as well. And we're over here, yeah, on the podcast and YouTube side, trying to kind of fight that fight as well. So I do the podcast Working People every single week, where I put out these interviews with workers, including, folks living in and around East Palestine, including railroad workers, but also, I just interviewed some of the Kaiser Permanente workers who waged the largest U.S. healthcare workers strike in our history back in October. I was talking to UAW folks throughout the strike, UPS Teamsters before that. So it's a real, real honor to get to do that show. And we have been seeing, I think, a lot more attention coming to the kind of interviews that I do on the show. But it's not, something that I think people are still ready to kind of make as part of as big a part of their media diet as, other things, because it's still a lot to ask people to listen to an hour of conversation with working people about their lives. But I think that the more that people around the country are noticing this sort of labor upsurge, they're seeing the headlines not only about these impending strikes at UPS or the strikes in Hollywood with the writers and the actors, the strike at UAW, so on and so forth. And they're asking, wow, what's going on here? Where's all this coming from? What are these people fighting for? How can I myself get involved? That's, I think, really... it's brought a lot of people to our channel, and it's made a lot of people more willing to listen than I think they may have been in years past. And I think what people are finding through our show, through your show, through anyone and everyone who is doing the diligent work of covering and lifting up the voices of our fellow workers who are fighting for better lives, better workplaces, better wages, so on and so forth. I think the more that people are listening to their fellow workers, the more that they are hearing that their fellow workers are going through the same stuff that we're all going through, right? I think that's been one of the big takeaways from the show. Whether I'm interviewing healthcare workers, auto workers, logistics workers, teachers, right? So many of these folks are telling me a version of the same story as I know they're telling you, which is look, we're working longer, we're working harder, but we're struggling to make ends meet. It feels like the cost of living keeps going up while our bosses pay and the shareholder dividends and the record profits keep going up. So something is wrong here. We're working our butts off and getting squeezed, and more work is getting piled onto fewer workers, and people are being understaffed, underpaid, so on and so forth, while record profits are being made all around us. So something's got to give, and I think the workers are really showing the way forward.
Yeah, yeah, and the mainstream media is starting to pick up on that, but not enough at all. And let's talk about East Palestine, Ohio here, if you don't mind, because I know you got this fundraiser coming up. And we saw the media all of a sudden see that, and they kept on it for a while, and all of a sudden they start pulling back. But the problems remain. We still do not have a rail safety bill, and I don't think we're going to see anything in the not too distant future. Right now, especially, we have an unworkable Congress right now. But let's talk about what you have been doing on your Working People podcast. You've talked to a number of people. Chris Albright, I see this one here, and apparently the New York Times did a feature on him. This is a dad, a husband, a resident who suffered major negative health effects after the derailment. What's going on with Chris? How bad is he right now as a result of what happened there on February 2nd of this year?
Man, well, again, I really, really appreciate you bringing me on and even asking about this, because it's so difficult, right, to be doing this work as a journalist to try to cover what, you know, is happening in East Palestine. And of course, I got into doing that coverage because I was covering the railroad, the high-stakes contract fight between the rail unions and the rail carriers last year, and I was interviewing countless conductors, engineers, dispatchers, signal callers, like all these folks from the rails who were warning me that if something didn't change on the railroads, if the Wall Street-led greedy practices of these companies that are raking in record profits while destroying our supply chain and destroying railroad workers at the same time, if something didn't change, a catastrophe was going to happen. They were all warning me that something like East Palestine was going to happen, and then it did on February 3rd of this year. As we know, the derailment of a Norfolk Southern freight train in East Palestine in February 3rd, and then the subsequent, ill-advised, that's an understatement, controlled release, quote-unquote, of the toxic vinyl chloride in a number of those cars, released the massive toxic death plume that we all saw pictures of that was hovering over East Palestine and the surrounding area, you know, putting all kinds of chemicals in the air, water, soil. And since then, since February 3rd, you know, the EPA, the state government, Norfolk Southern, like, everyone's been telling these people in East Palestine that everything's fine. There are literally guys in hazmat suits who have been there all for like the past 10 months removing all of the contaminated soil at the same time that they're saying, oh, you guys are fine, go on with your regular lives, right? And right. So Chris Albright and his family are... It's really sad to say. I mean, like, their story is both, really heartbreaking and not unique in the terms of what people in East Palestine are going through, because I can guarantee you, and have heard myself, you know, like, countless other stories like the Albrights, where, as we said, Chris Albright was a healthy, hardworking guy. He was a gas line worker. He was a foreman working in and around East Palestine before that February 3rd derailment, helping his wife Jess, working together to provide for their family. They got a lot of kids. They do a lot of hockey. I mean, like, they're just a, you know, standard American family living in Ohio over by you. Then mm-hmm. This thing happens. No one in East Palestine asked for this, right? They did not cause this. It was corporate greed and government negligence that caused this derailment that has totally, you know, upended the lives of people in East Palestine. And again, while people are being told everything's fine, the water's fine, don't worry about the nosebleeds you're getting, the headaches you're getting, the nausea you're getting, the diarrhea your kids are getting, that's all in your head. That's just stress effects. You know, you can go back to your homes, you can go back to school, you can go back to work, everything's fine, we promise. So then a couple months later, Chris Albright goes to the doctor because he can't even walk up the stairs without losing his breath, and his doctor tells him, you are experiencing massive heart failure. If your heart was a 10-valve engine, you're on one valve right now. And so that just totally changed this family's, you know, this family and Chris's life forever, because now he can't work, and the bills are piling up. They can't, you know, just uproot their lives and move and sell their home. I mean, who can sell their homes after your property values have been tanked by a derailment and a toxic fallout in East Palestine, right? Mm-hmm. To say nothing of your kids are in the local school. You got a life there. You can't just, like, uproot and move. And also, where are you going to get the money to do that? And so this is what people like Chris and working people in and around East Palestine are going through, even though Governor Mike DeWine won't declare a disaster emergency to unlock more federal funds, even though the Railway Safety Act, which we thought was going to be a bipartisan piece of legislation to try to address some of the issues that created the conditions for the East Palestine derailment and other derailments like it, like something like East Palestine could literally happen again tomorrow anywhere in the country, because we have done nothing to substantively address the root causes of it. Meanwhile, families in East Palestine have been left to rot. They've been told that, you know, like, they just need to carry on with their lives. The national media have largely moved on. Politicians who express support have largely gone silent. And again, Norfolk Southern is telling everyone everything is fine. And they're, you know, they're going to, like, you know, they're paying, like, people for to stay in hotels, or they're giving the money they're giving the town some money for, like, a new water center kind of thing. But I mean, like, the amount of damage this company has done to this town is incalculable, and they need to be paying way more than they already have, and there's still way more to be done to get life back on track for people in East Palestine. And that's not happening right now, which is why we are doing this live stream fundraiser with residents from East Palestine for my show, Working People. It'll be a 12-hour live stream this Saturday, December 16th, that I'll be hosting with my producer, Jules Taylor. We're going to have residents from town. We're going to have specialists, journalists, folks who have covered this issue. We're also going to have, you know, like, special guests like Kim Kelly, a great labor journalist out of Philly, and other friends come on to the stream, keep the energy up, keep the entertainment going, and we're going to try to raise as much money as we possibly can for the families of East Palestine, like the Albrights, so that after everything that they have been through this year, they can at least have some additional help so that they don't have to stress about how they're going to make Christmas happen for their children this year, because they've been through enough, and they need to be reminded that the country still remembers them, that we stand with them, that we're not going to forget about them. So I implore people, if you can, please tune in to the live stream on Saturday. Please don't forget about East Palestine, because they are still living through this nightmare, even if the rest of us have sort of moved on from it.
Oh, yeah. It's a living hell for them. Max, I got to take a quick break here. We're going to talk more with you. I want to get specifics from you and how people can help out on that fundraiser. Again, it's going to be this Saturday, December 16th. It's a 12-hour fundraiser to make Christmas happen for East Palestine, Ohio. Max Alvarez, who is the host of the Working People podcast, also editor-in-chief of the Real News Network. Key word there is real news. We'll continue with him. Also, Matt Biggs, who is the president of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers, will be joining us later in the show. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's L-I-U-N-A.
Attention members of the Heat and Frost Insulators Union who are interested in traveling. Central Ohio has more construction projects on the books than anywhere in the U.S. Mega projects, large and medium-sized jobs are creating more work than our local 50 brothers and sisters can handle. Projects like Intel, the Honda LG battery plant, and multiple data centers for Facebook, Google, and Amazon offer union wages, overtime, exciting incentives. Local 50 is seeking union travelers to meet the needs of its signatory contractors who can put you to work immediately. If you're a member in good standing and interested in the work opportunities in Central Ohio, visit insulators50.com/AWF travel for more information. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Ironworkers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Max Alvarez, who is editor-in-chief of the Real News Network and host of the Working People podcast. Want to call attention to what's going to happen this Saturday. It's a 12-hour fundraiser to make Christmas happen for East Palestine, Ohio residents that were devastated earlier this year by that train derailment from Norfolk Southern. Okay, Max, I want to get some specifics from you in this segment. This is a call to action. We want to make sure that people tune in to your Working People podcast, and more importantly, help the residents out this Saturday. So you're going to start this now. What is it? 10 in the morning, you're going to be on the air until 10 p.m., and I guess there's a party going on. So lay it out for me so people can check this out. Go ahead.
Happy to do so. So, yeah, like you said, it's really, we're going all out this Saturday, December 16th. After interviewing residents of East Palestine, railroad workers who work in and around the area, you know, we just couldn't stand by and not do more. And so we've been talking with the Albrights. We've been talking with folks from the Unity Council, from folks in and around town who are doing incredible, necessary work. Because that's what I also want to emphasize, is even though this community has been devastated by this derailment that was not their fault, they've been lied to, they've been abandoned, they are still fighting, right? It is the community that is still fighting for answers, for accountability, and for you know, fighting to keep their community together, right? And so I want to really give a shout out to them, and it's because of them and that fight and because of the work that they've already been doing that we are able to work with them now to put on this live stream fundraiser. And on Saturday, I will be here in Baltimore. Unfortunately, I can't be in East Palestine right now, but I will be at my command station. I'll be working with my podcast producer, Jules Taylor, and we are going to be live for 12 hours straight on the Working People YouTube channel, you know, just live streaming and trying throughout the day to get as many people as we can to donate to this fundraiser, which is going to, you know, like raise money for as many families as we can so that they can have help around the holidays. And so at the same time that that live stream is going on, from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, the folks in East Palestine are going to be putting on an in-person party at the East Palestine Eagles Club. There's going to be food, donated food. There's going to be some live music. People are going to be gathering, right? Because that's what this is all about, right? I mean, the holiday should be a time for joy. It should be a time for, you know, relaxing, eating, being with friends and family, right? And that's what we want it to be for folks in East Palestine. And we don't want them having to worry about, how am I going to buy my kids like this or that present, or how am I going to even afford the dinner that we're going to, you know, try to make because all of our costs have gone to, you know, like trying to keep life afloat after this derailment, whether we're staying in hotels or Airbnbs or, you know, what have you. Like, it's just been a major financial burden on top of everything else that folks in East Palestine have had to deal with. And so we want to raise as much money as we can over the course of the day. But the fundraising portal is currently open. It is actually administered by a great local nonprofit in East Palestine called The Way Station. They provide kind of emergency and disaster support for folks around the county. And they have the fundraising portal set up. It's got a long URL, so I know we're going to be able to put the link to that in the show notes for this episode. So I would just encourage folks listening, if you want to donate or share the donation portal, it's in there. The hyperlink is in there in the show notes. But, yeah, that's the basic premise. Don't get as many people as we can to donate. We're having families are in the area in East Palestine, not just in East Palestine, because let's remember, folks on the Pennsylvania side, I mean, like, they also got, you know, all that toxic fallout, right? It's actually a lot of people around there, so we're trying to not be restrictive. We're just saying, like, look, if you live in the area, if you need some help, just sign up on this form, tell us what your email is, how many kids you got at home, and whether you prefer a Target or an Amazon gift card. That's all we need to know. We're not being gatekeepy about it. We just want to get folks the extra help that they need. And so, and I don't want to touch the money or anything like that. I just want to help raise it. And so that's why we've worked out this system with the residents, with the weigh station in town, where we're going to be, on Saturday, driving as many people as we can to the fundraising portal, raising as much money as we can, and having people in and around East Palestine signing up. And so then when the fundraiser concludes at 10 p.m. on Saturday, December 16th, we're going to say, okay, we raised this much money. We've got this many families that have signed up, this many kids to cover. So let's just spread it all out evenly. Here are the preferred gift cards they said that they wanted. We give that information to the weigh station. The weigh station uses the money to get those gift cards. Bada bing, bada boom, we get people the aid that they need. So that is the premise. The live stream is going to be fun. Like I said, we're going to have residents from East Palestine on. We're going to be talking about the derailment, the fallout. We're going to be talking about the railroad struggle. We're going to have railroad workers on. We're going to have fun special guests on to help, you know, like just have fun. So it's a really, you know, I think beautiful and important cause. I know that there's a lot going on. Money's always tight, so I understand if folks can't donate, but please just help us spread the word. Please don't forget about East Palestine. Let's let that Christmas spirit shine through, and let's do what we can to make sure that this community gets the aid that it needs and has, you know, a little bit of extra support so that they can have the Christmas that they deserve this year.
So those of you listening right now, just Google Working People's Podcast, Working People's Podcast, and that'll take you right there, and hopefully you'll be listening, you'll be contributing. I know this is going to be an effort for so many people involved, and Max, I salute you for what you're doing here. We're talking a 12-hour fundraiser that's going to happen this Saturday, December 16th, starting at 10 a.m., going to 10 p.m., and then there's the party at the East Palestine Eagles Club. So we will promote this here on America's Workforce through the links and also tomorrow on the show. So let's set up an interview in the not too distant future and talk more about like East Palestine. There's a lot of East Palestines all around America. You know that. Maybe not to the extent of what happened there, but the whole point, and you said this at the beginning of the show, we got to raise workers' voices, and that's what this is all about. And that's what we do Monday through Friday right here on America's Workforce. So you take care, my brother, and stay in touch, okay?
Right back at you, brother. Solidarity from Baltimore.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Matt Biggs is the president of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers, and he is coming up next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's L-I-U-N-A.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at CWA-Union.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you can find more at teamster.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. In fact, Melissa Cropper, president of the OFT, will be joining us next Tuesday. Right now, though, let's go to line number two. Welcome back to the show, Matthew Biggs. Matt is the president of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers, IFPTE.org is their website. And he's here to talk about 2023 and looking forward to 2024 and also artificial intelligence and national security. Boy, that's scary just saying that on the show. But Matt Biggs, how are we doing today, my brother?
Hey, Flash, how are you? Thanks for having me back.
Are you still at 90,000 members in your union?
Yeah, we're at 90. We're quickly approaching 91,000. So we're continuing to organize and have success there as well.
So let's talk about that, because this has been a banner year. It's been a banner year for America's workforce. We've gained a whole lot of listeners this year, and a lot of that has to do with the supercharged union movement right now. You got militant leaders like Sean Fain, Sean O'Brien. They got great contracts. We got a lot of people with double-digit contracts this year. I'm just wondering, are you feeling some of that love in your union right now?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're continuing to negotiate, but we've wrapped up several contracts. For example, in the state of New Jersey, where our folks have achieved record wage increases. So we're very pleased with that. But yeah, you know, we stand in strong solidarity with, you know, the UAW, the Teamsters. You know, UAW strike, of course. The Teamsters got a great contract and avoided their strike, but definitely, it, you know, that kind of thing helps all of us in the labor movement and all workers throughout the country.
And Matt, let me ask you this. I mean, a lot of the contracts, you know, with the exception of the Writers Guild and SAG-AFTRA, I mean, we're talking blue-collar industries, and you're pretty much in the white-collar sector. Is that, with that being the case, is that more difficult to accomplish? And obviously, you're dealing with the government in some of these situations here, many of these situations. I mean, can you speak to that?
Yeah, you know, in the government, particularly in the federal government, you don't bargain wages. Those kind of things are taken care of by the Congress and in the White House. But we do have, I mean, our biggest local flash is SPEA, which represents upwards of 20,000 workers in the aerospace industry, Boeing and Spirit AeroSystems. And, you know, we've achieved record contracts at SPEA. I mean, we were... I don't know when their contract's up again, but I mean they've been negotiating 5% raises for their members. So historic increases for our members as well, and we have been enjoying that. You know, we've had fights. Certainly, we've had fights. We have to fight to achieve that, but we've been doing pretty well, fortunately.
Well, as you know, there's still talk of another government shutdown. They've been kicking the can down the road here a little bit. And I'm just wondering, what are you hearing about that? And that's going to be, I think it's a twofold thing that's going to be a partial shutdown and on one date and then more on the other. What's the latest on that, Matt?
Yeah, you know, it's an unprecedented situation with these funding bills. I'll just say at the outset, Flash, it goes back to the fact that this Republican-led House of Representatives is dysfunctional and they don't want to govern. And there's a portion of their caucus that wants to actually shut the government down and destroy the whole thing, and that's the problem. We're not dealing with good faith people on the other side. I'm talking about labor and people that represent working people. So we're dealing with a Republican majority, as slight as it is, that actually a good portion, enough of them, want to shut the government down. But yeah, it's a two-tier thing. January 19th is a deadline for several bills, several of the spending bills that cover like agriculture, energy and water, military construction, those kinds of agencies. And then there's another set of appropriations bills that expire on February 2nd, which include agencies like the Department of Defense, NASA, Labor, HHS, Legislative Branch, those agencies. So it's kind of strange. But we are, Congress is set to recess. They're going to go out for 3 weeks. They could be out as early as tonight. And they're going to come back next year, and we're going to be facing another government shutdown in one form or another, unfortunately.
Very sad. I want to go back to last week, and I saw this on your website about the Senate forum regarding artificial intelligence's impact on national defense and homeland security. And I know you testified, you made some recommendations. Well, first of all, how were you treated on that panel? Because, you know, we're in such a hostile political environment. How did that go?
Well, I tell you, Flash, it was kind of refreshing because it was a bipartisan effort. It was organized by Senate Majority Leader Schumer. He had Republican Senator Mike Rounds, among others, was kind of leading the Republican side. And they invited, you know, they've done a series of forums. This was the ninth one. And it's looking at AI and how it impacts all different segments of the economy as well as society. So this one was national defense and intelligence. And we got invited. I was the only labor witness there, which was fine. But most of the folks there were from industry, from defense contractors and IT folks. So I was the labor guy there, and it was interesting. I was glad. I was happy to be invited. And yeah, we did make a number of recommendations. Number one, Flash, was to include the workers when it comes to making decisions to replace their jobs with artificial intelligence. And that was one of our main recommendations. And then the other one, never replace human decision-making in favor of artificial intelligence. So those were two of the main recommendations. But it's interesting. I mean, you see these defense contractors and these IT companies in a nutshell, their prevailing message was, we need to invest up to $50 billion of U.S. taxpayer money, give the money to them so they can replace our jobs in national defense with AI. That was pretty much their message. It was concerning to hear, and I'm hopeful that the lawmakers that were there will, you know, and I told them this, provide proper oversight of the expenditures of those monies and make sure that you're not just doling out billions of dollars to profit-making institutions and companies and corporations, doling them out with little oversight on unproven technologies.
$50 billion of taxpayers' money. That's amazing. Well, I hope that raised their eyebrows and said, wait a minute, we can't go down that road. Did you sense any of that from the other participants on that panel?
Well, I said it. I said it there at the forum. You know, there were like 20 or so panelists at the forum, so you didn't get much time to talk. It was a 2-hour forum. But when I had an opportunity, I said, look, we're talking about taxpayer dollars here, okay? You just don't dole this money out to defense contractors who claim that, you know, China's going to annihilate us if they don't get this money. And that's basically what it boiled down to. And I did make that point. I should note that there were other senators coming in and out of the forum, and they were actually sitting there like in the front row of the audience listening to the folks that were speaking. It's folks like Senator Klobuchar, Senator Markey was there, and some others were there as well.
Well, I would imagine they're going to talk more about this in the new year. And why don't you and I have another conversation on this? Because it's scary. You're dealing with national and homeland security here. You don't want to turn that over to a machine, okay? That doesn't make any sense. Not at all.
Oh, exactly, Flash. And I'll say, I know we don't have a lot of time, but, you know, we represent administrative law judges that make, at Social Security Administration, that make disability determinations based on the law. And you know, you can easily see where, and we are concerned that they could be replaced with some sort of algorithm that decides whether someone's disabled or not. These are the most vulnerable people in our society, and you know, you can see where the government, if you get the wrong administration in, would try and replace actual human beings that make these decisions with a computer. It's really very concerning. It's a very concerning situation.
Yeah, and it should be. Yeah, well, that sounds like another interview, but I'm going to let you go. Matt Biggs, president of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. Do check out their website, ifpte.org. You take care. We'll talk in the new year, okay, brother?
You as well, Flash. Be well, man.
All right. That'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the latest from the American Legion and the Alliance for Retired Americans. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.